Hey, welcome back to Switchcast Lab. I'm your host, Doug Tabbitt, and Switchcast is the automotive-related podcast where we are searching for the truth and the humor in the car industry. Many of you allege that we have not found it and never will.
We're going to keep trying, though, Doug.
Yes, we'll try to be funny and never find truth. So, this is our season finale. What does that mean? Well, probably this is our last live episode as you have come to know it, for those of you who are watching on a live streaming platform, thanks to Boxcast. We may go back on that. The producer, Ethan, and I have had some lively discussions and debates, and we're still finalizing season five plans, but we are trying to change things up once again to make it a better experience for everybody. And that includes our pocketbooks. Not going to lie, we are sellouts here. So we're trying to do what is best for the listeners. And that translates into sponsorship dollars. So more listeners is better. Yes. We thank you for all of you who are loyal listeners. And we would love to hear from you in terms of what you have liked, whether or not you want us to not abandon the live format and or whatever. We certainly got great feedback from the last time we changed things up and went to the current format we have now. It was a good change, and at least that was the feedback we got from everybody who listened. So again, we would love your feedback. The next 4 to 5 weeks are going to be very special. We are not going anywhere. They just won't be live, but they're going to be really, really great episodes. We've got two of them recorded already with very special guests on great topics. I'm sounding like Donald Trump here.
Great. Just great.
They're really fantastic. They're the best.
Every
big,
single
big
adjective.
Numbers.
The biggest we've ever seen. Really, I tell you, I was surprised when they told me people say, sorry, I'll stop.
We crack ourselves up here. I hope we crack you up too. So yes. And then July 31st, which is also our open house at Switch Cars, we're going to do a special live Q&A only. Just live Q&A here with a live audience from leftover from the open house. It's BYOB there, so we'll see how lively the audience gets, but also we'll be live with you all. So be thinking about your questions for approximately a month from now. But let's recap this season. We've got a great full episode tonight. There it is. I used great again. Let's make that the drinking game word of the night.
Are you trying to make me spend the night here, Doug? We got to be careful.
For our audience already at home and being responsible, and the kids are in bed and all that stuff. So what have we learned this season? This is my favorite thing to do at the end of a year or a season and kind of just recap. Because let's be honest, growing old is about learning lessons and maybe becoming wiser. A good friend of mine, Dave Nelson, says that, he said, quote, "I used to be young and stupid. Now I'm old." So what have I learned this season? I learned that Fox Body floor mats, that's Fox Body Mustang floor mats, apparently go for $1,500.
What?
And I already knew this, but the rear quarter windows for the Fox Body notchbacks are like thousands of dollars for a not cracked one.
Why did you need to know this?
Well, I didn't, but I've had a few different Fox Body Mustangs. And so I'm in those groups, and so these things come up.
Oh.
But I saw a for sale post, and somebody's talking about having the original floor mats and how expensive they are. And I was like, okay. But, you know, these same people are the ones that complain about being on a fixed income and that prices are being driven up by collectors. Maybe not unlike myself, who think that $20,000 is nothing to spend on a car. So it's like, yeah, that'll be a fun toy. And they're like, yeah. So I'm part of the problem. I get it. But there's a point here. there's always a point. May not be a sharp one, but, you know. The next time someone says that you have to be rich to own a Porsche, I will respectfully disagree.
Oh?
Well, their floor mats don't cost $1,500.
No, yeah, you can get new ones for like $300 or $400, like brand new.
I don't even think they're that much. Suncoast Parts or whatever, not a sponsor, non-endorsed, whatever, shout out here. But I think they're like $150 or something, depending on the model.
I think for my 968, I spent $250 or $260 on new front. No, it was all four. It was like not that expensive, direct from Porsche.
Oh, well, it was that graphite. Classic gray, that was a premium.
I know, but they were black because you couldn't buy any other color. They're like, oh, you want actual? No, we only make black now.
Yeah. Anyway, so yes, the crazy collectors and restorers on some of these old cars have really driven up the price. Let's see, what else have I learned? I have learned not to comment with any sort of expert quote unquote opinion on the interwebs. Specifically about like driving. Mm. So I watch all these like driving fail videos and wreck videos, and occasionally I'll comment like, well, here's what they did wrong, you know, from a driving principle of like, I understand oversteer and understeer and weight transfer and grip and all that crap. But heaven forbid you actually take that expertise to the internet and say something truthful or right. It's bad. So the two that I commented on, one of them was this guy who was driving Road America and he almost wrecked into the car in front of him. The car in front of him went off track to the outside, then hooked and like came back, shot back across the track, and then like hooked again and shot back across the track again. And the guy behind him in the camera car almost hit him, but didn't, like slammed on the brakes at the last second and then got through. And he posted the video, like essentially congratulating himself and making fun of the guy in front of him. And I was like, well, you know, actually this could have been like, this shouldn't have been as close as it was, because you missed him by like a couple inches and you locked up the brakes at the last minute, the second time he shot back across the racetrack. But if you would just lift it off from the get-go, like anytime somebody goes off, puts two wheels off, you need to assume they're going to hook and come back across the track in front of you. So this could have been a non-issue at all. It could have been totally non-dramatic. You would have just slowed down. And he and everybody else just jumped on me like, okay, Mr. Expert. I was like,
that actually organically came up in my algorithm. And I was like, oh, and for like the comments, or I was looking at the description because I was curious what was going on. And then I saw you just getting like dragged in the comments. And I'm like, right. You said kind of the correct, like, it is the
nobody
whole, like,
argued with the truth of what I said. They just, it was all ad hominem. You're an idiot. You're stupid. You're out here for clout. And I was like, but am I wrong?
Well, and it's also like, isn't the guy posting it out for clout anyway? Because he was like, look at how impressive I am.
He specifically asked me, he's like, so what do you think about the driving of the guy in front of me? And I'm like, you already said that. You already like shamed him. So we're not all here to be yes men for you. So I don't know, good drivers, good people in general can take constructive criticism, and like good race drivers are always looking for that edge. Like, what could I have done better? So if you as an amateur guy on a track day in a vintage car think that you're the greatest driver ever, then I can't help you. And honestly, that's why I stopped doing driver instruction. I am not the greatest driver in the world. I am not. I'm not a pro by any stretch of the imagination. The difference between really good amateurs and pros is night and day. Like, they are superhuman. But I know enough to take almost any good amateur driver and tweak their driving and make them faster and better. And I think I'm good at communicating that as well. So like for somebody that's just like a track day hero to be like, yeah, I'm awesome, you can't tell me anything, that's a really bad place to be. And I've been in the right seat with a couple of those guys that were SCCA licensed and thought they were good. And I'm in the right seat going, you're going to kill somebody and it's not going to be me, so I'm going to get out. But you couldn't tell them anything different. So they've just made their way to the internet.
Oh, of course. Everybody wants to be a hero.
Yep. Yep. There was another one that was like a cop car did a pit maneuver and they almost wrecked the cop car because when the cop car does a pit, they need to be like right on the edge of the rear bumper. But if they go too far up, their front of the car and or the front wheel makes contact with the rear wheel of the other car. And both those things are spinning. So they catch and like, you know, this is why a lot of open wheel series have fender covers, because when the two wheels touch that are both spinning at an extremely high rate of speed, it shoots one car off. And so that's what happens with these cops. And sometimes they get lucky and they're successful. And that's what happened in this one. And I was like, oh man, that was close. The cop car could have totally wrecked himself. And everyone's like, oh yeah, how long you been a cop? Post videos of your pit maneuvers. And I was like, okay. I just had an opinion, but
now that's everybody's immediate defense online. It's like, show me you doing better.
Right.
It's just the first go-to, even though they themselves could not, you know, most likely do any better.
I heard a great quote, and I think this is the case when people respond something like, oh, I have a Lamborghini, right, on social media, because people just think it's an impossibility that anybody with a Lamborghini could be on social media. Like, they're so out of touch that there's no way. And so they're just like, yeah, okay, you're in your mom's basement typing this. And there's a great quote, something to the effect of like, people that are stuck in their own like economic world or realm or whatever are so just disconnected from the fact that anyone else could be doing better than them, that they refuse to accept it as a reality and just hate on anyone that suggests otherwise. And it's a really unfortunate mindset of our culture, I think, that people can't just be like, oh yeah, there are people out there that are smart or successful or whatever. And instead of hating on them, I should aspire to be like them.
Yeah, there's people out there that are smarter, more successful and whatnot than you and I right now. And that's just kind of the way it is.
Yes, our podcast numbers relative to other podcasts are evidence of that. And that's why we're changing things up for season 5. We are growing. We are growing. I don't want to disparage what we've accomplished thus far. We're doing pretty well, but we always want to do better.
Mentioning the next season and the change up, I do want to acknowledge that we have a pretty hefty super chat from Anthony.
Anthony!
Thank you so very much. We have seen quite a few people saying that we should stay live in the YouTube comments, including Anthony. And they say, vote to continue live casts and or Q&A sprinkled into the new format. Interested in what's coming through the pipeline, though.
Okay. What we may do, what we might do, is go to a Patreon system. So we will be recording them and the people within the Patreon can be there live with us and we'll do a special Q&A for them. So you'll essentially get a behind the scenes look at us recording the podcast before it's put out and produced for the general public. So that is an option as well.
It'd be very intimate.
Yes. Yes. What else did I learn this season? I learned that people being chased by the police, this is what I do with my free time is watch cop chase videos. People being chased by the police use their turn signals more than BMW drivers.
Oh, that's amazing.
I mean, honestly, they probably use them more than the average driver. It's comical. You watch like murder suspects running from the cops and they're like, I'm going to turn right here. I'm also going to run the red light and hit three cars. But here's my turn signal 200 feet in advance. It's so funny.
I wonder if on some level that is just them trying to like warn people to say, hey, I'm trying to get away, but I'm not trying to hurt anybody else. It was just maybe the one or two people I hurt very intentionally, but everybody else is fine. Like, it's some weird sort of like,
Yeah, I don't know. I don't understand that. I keep seeing it and I just laugh every time. Things I learned. I did not learn what quote oil up means, but multiple commenters on one single video told me to do that. They said, oil up, Doug. And I was like, I think I'm missing something.
Ethan, didn't you say what it probably meant? It was something around like moisturizing.
Yeah, that's what
I thought. But it had no relevance to the video at all. And there was multiple people on that video that said it. Like, it just, I don't
know.
The internet's a weird place.
Yeah. And I'm too old to understand it. I'm Hank is my spirit animal.
Hank is just you preparing everybody for you to be like that for real.
I practice my dad jokes. I've been practicing them for a long time so that I can be that cranky old guy with a dry sense of humor that everybody is just dismisses as that old guy in the corner. But I'm gonna have lines, let me tell you what.
That old guy with his maroon Corvette won't stop talking. He doesn't even drive it anymore.
Owned it for 40 years.
He's got a Lingenfelter.
Oh, man.
You all know that Boxcast is a live streaming company based in Cleveland, Ohio, and they serve broadcasters and viewers around the world. Their founders launched Boxcast back in 2013 with one purpose: to make people a part of the experience. So if you're looking to live stream your podcast, church service, car show, sporting event, wedding, or even your cannonball attempt, Boxcast is an easy and flexible live streaming platform for organizations. Boxcast is so easy that we're broadcasting this show with a phone. So head on over to switchcars.com/Boxcast to start your free trial.
Okay, we don't have Hank with us tonight, but we must mention an event that Hank will be at, and that is the Corvette Caravan. That's right, at the National Corvette Museum. They have their 30th anniversary of the museum, and I believe this will be the 6th Corvette Caravan because they do it every 5 years. I think my math is good there. Unless they did one the first year, then it would be the 7th.
Math is mathin'.
Right. So there's estimated to be about 10,000 Corvettes. It is Labor Day weekend, so the end of August. I believe it's that Wednesday through Saturday. Arnie and I will be doing a cannonball seminar there, both I think Friday and Saturday, where we're going to be doing some track time. On the Wednesday evening, we're going to have both Cannonball Record cars there, my one-of-one Corvette, and Hank will be there. And one of our listeners suggested that Hank do a guided character tour of all the one-of-one Corvettes at the National Corvette Museum.
Oh, that would be amazing.
Maybe do a charity auction. I was thinking, did you ever do like the St. Jude like walkathons or whatever?
Oh, I did something. Where is it like you bring donations for some cause and then it's like you're walking some sort of distance to
And people pledge like for however many miles, like, all right, I'll pay 50 cents a mile. And so you know.
Yes.
Right. So I was thinking like for every minute that Hank stays in character and does not break character, people could pledge and we'd live stream it and see how long Hank can go in a world of Hanks. So that's a thought here.
Oh, that would be amazing.
I don't know how to make that happen. Probably need a special website or something like that. GoFundMe. But that's the plan. But either way, come down to the Corvette Caravan end of August 2024.
Real pumped. It's going to be a good time.
Heck yes. Let's see. Market update.
Ooh, actually, before that, we have two more super chats.
Okay.
Turns out all we had to do was say, we're not going to do this anymore.
Let's
live.
Do it every week.
Live.
Hey, it's like the Nissan GTR every year. This is our last year.
Yes. Chip
this
manual.
Is the last year, though. 2025 is for real the last Nissan GTR.
For real this time, we promise, right?
So they say.
So Chip Manuel, thank you very much for your slightly larger than Anthony's super chat. Specifically said, can't let Anthony steal the show with a winky face.
Average size.
Thanks for all the wonderful content. Glad I found the podcast when I moved here to Ohio. We're glad to have you here, Chip. And Killer Snow also just said, wanted to say thanks for being my Porsche educator, Doug. So I don't know who you've educated.
Edumacator.
We teach some things sometimes.
Can't spell Porsche without IMS.
Yeah. Oh. Amazing.
Can't spell IMSA without IMS, but that's... Yeah, they use Metzger engines in those. So yeah. Anyway, weird, random nerd side note there. Tesla. This is a great market update. So a few episodes ago, not many episodes ago, there was a Tesla Cybertruck Cyber Beast that sold on Manheim for $244,000. That was this season, so it had to have been this year, and I think it was mid-season, so maybe 2 months ago. And they've been going down in value fast because we think they're essentially clout machines. Well, there was one on P-Car Market yesterday. It was a Foundation Edition, which I still don't know the difference between that and the Cyber Beast, and I still don't care. 350 miles sold yesterday. Oh, no boy. Reserve auction. This is a retail auction.
That was bold. Are you asking me for how much?
Yeah.
Okay. 80,000.
No, that's, yeah, a little low.
Okay.
I was ready for a big announcement of how low it was. $102,750.
Oh, honestly, that is really low.
That's down from $244,000 a few months ago for Cyber Beast, but I think the Cyber Beast and Foundations seem to be going for generally the same amount. So,
goodness.
Yeah.
The time has come. I saw that they were recalling them again because of some issues with the windshield and some trim pieces and whatnot coming and that massive wiper, some issue with things falling off.
Mm.
And in that, they included how many vehicles they were recalling, and they've made like 12,000 of these things at this point. So they are
decent.
Like, they will be everywhere.
That's more than Fisker has made total of all their yeah, cars.
Seriously.
I bet you could put like 10 different EV companies all cumulative and wouldn't have sold 12,000 cars. So I've taken deposits for that many, but
nobody is unique anymore. So now we're just going to keep saying crazy raps because that's going to be the next fad.
I feel like that fad has played out already though, too, because everybody has done some sort of rap. The other thing is that they're, and this is not necessarily unique to Cybertrucks, but they're totaling them out quickly because of the insane cost of parts. So relatively small accidents are totaling these Cybertrucks out.
Not surprised.
Yeah. On the other side of the fence, also on P-Car Market, this will be depressing to a number of people because it's pricing people out of the market, or it's just nutty. A 23,000-mile 997.2, so that's like 2009 to 12, Carrera 4 GTS Coupe, 6-speed manual in macadamia brown metallic over espresso natural leather with sport seats, sold on P-Car Market for $166,000 plus fees.
Doug, I got to be honest. I was really hoping we weren't going to talk about this. I'm not in the market, but that depresses me.
That is
an obscene amount of money.
But it's a it's crazy spec, rare spec, sport seats, macadamia over espresso. I see those as fancy words for 70s brown over 70s brown.
But is this just the whole, like, nobody bought this because nobody was interested, but now that it's hyper rare, somebody's got to be like, I've got the only brown over brown GTS. Is it even a manual? Is it a stick?
Is a stick. Okay. Yeah. And it has sport seats. Like it was a great spec, but.
And the brown does look good.
It's not a 500 mile car and it's a GTS, not a GT3. Like, I don't get it. I don't get it. Yes, I would rather have one of those than a brand new 911. But I don't get it. Speaking of brand new 911s, right? So we talked a couple weeks ago that the new 2025 911, well, the GTS anyway, is going to be hybrid only, but all the 2025s are going to be automatic. They are not offering a manual transmission for 2025 for the new half generation of 911s. Some people took issue with us on that on the interwebs, but
I gotta be honest,
wrong.
All the marketing was very confusing to the, cause it didn't directly say no manuals were coming. It said specifically for next year, but then I don't know. It was all confusing. Everybody was saying different things.
Well, the best of our information, and we're right, is that for 2025, Porsche is not making any manual transmissions. They may put one in the turbo. They might put one in the GT3, but they haven't put one in the turbo since 2013. So I don't know why would they start now. Who knows? But anyway, it seems to be not paying off very well for them, at least in the short term. That combined with the massive increase in sticker prices might signal the end of hyper demand for the Porsche brand. So Porsche was statistically one of the last and might still be the last manufacturers kind of after the post-pandemic buying frenzy. After that cooled, they were still maintaining an over MSRP average for their new cars. And they were one of the last ones to be doing that. So they were really holding gross, as we say in the car business. However, there was a post today on the 911 buy sell page that where a dealer was offering a base 911 Cabriolet, which, side note, previously the base ones were the hardest to get because there was less margin for Porsche. So they were essentially using their production to make turbos and turbo S's and GTS's because they'd make the most money off of them. So there was people waiting a year and a half to 2 years for a base 911. Anyway, there's a dealer offering an incoming car, August delivery, 911 cab at MSRP. Unsold, not spoken for.
So, like, the juxtaposition of that to this wild brown car is, like, just depressing to me.
It's depressing and exciting.
Yes, I want them to sell for less so people like collectors or clout chasers aren't buying them, so enthusiasts can buy them to enjoy driving them. That's what I would like to see.
Right.
So maybe it'll happen with the new cars first, then it'll flush through to the old ones very slowly. I don't know.
It's a double-edged sword, not a double-sided coin. It's a double-edged sword because we want manufacturers to see that there are enthusiasts out there that value analog cars that look good, that feel good, and that sound good. But at the same time, as relatively poor enthusiasts, we don't want to be priced out of our dreams.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm sitting over here worried that my income is not going to keep up with the value of what I thought were some reasonably attainable cars.
Right. Kind of boring. It's a 997 GTS. Who cares? Yeah.
It's like, gosh.
I have a 997 Carrera 4, and I'm like, man, it'd be great to upgrade to a good spec GTS, but I can't justify paying double, which my 997 is worth like 45 grand. I'm like, I can't justify 90. But now it's 160, it's 70. Okay.
I think we can cure this, though, because there seems to be a bidding war going on for our love and attention, because Anthony just did another super chat that was twice as much as their initial one to ask a question this time.
Oh, so well, let me finish my point, though. So before we move on, thank you, Anthony. Any guess at what the MSRP is on this base 911 Carrera Cabriolet? It's got a few options. It's nicely specced. Base 911 Carrera Cabriolet.
The base ones went up a little. So I'm going to guess $110,000.
$160,000.
What?
For a base 911 cab.
What?
$160,000.
Oh, I need to
This
stop.
Is not going to go well for Porsche.
My
they are late
gosh.
On the game.
How is that the... Oh. I must have read those numbers originally and just like blacked out for a second because it was so much money for a base 911.
The base sticker with no options is $130,000.
That is excessive.
$160,000 for a base 911 Carrera Cabriolet. Let that sink in.
I think they've jumped the shark. I thought they did a little bit ago.
The world thought... The politicians, whatever, whoever's responsible for $15 an hour wages at McDonald's thought that they were being the savior of the world by giving people a living wage. Well, I got news for you. $8 an hour at McDonald's and an $80,000 base 911 sticker is a lot better than $15 an hour and $160,000. Or it's kind of the same ratio. So that's basic economics. One thing goes up, they all go up. So,
sheesh.
Yeah. All right. Back to Anthony.
Yes. Anthony's question is your wife into cars? If not, or not to the same depth as you,
nope.
Can you please shed light on how car guys might cope with significant others that aren't enamored by autos like us?
Oh, man, that's a good question. So she drove to the grocery store yesterday and she had a really terrible day. A lot of stuff went wrong. And when she got home, she went to put stuff in the chest freezer. And Side note, I really want to put a rug on top of it now. I just decided. So then it would be the hairy chest freezer. But for some reason, the breaker had tripped. And so everything had melted in our chest freezer. So we had to throw out a crap ton of meat and ice cream and all sorts of stuff. So that was really depressing end to a crappy day. But she told me, she goes, yeah, it was a good trip to the store. It would have been even better if I was in an Audi R8 Spider. And I'm like, what?
She's learning.
She really, really wants an R8, but she's not a car person. I've long held that. I think car guys really, really want their wives and or their kids to be into cars, to share their passion. And my good friend John Sabo is like vehemently against it. He's like, no, cars are a guy's escape. Like, he doesn't want to go to car things where wives and girlfriends are involved. And I kind of agree with him on that front. As much as I love my wife to be involved in certain things, like, you have the things that you and your wife do and you and your family do, and then you have things that your guys do. You know, it'd be like your wife being like, oh man, my husband, he's really not into manis and pedis and like going to Gucci, but how do I get him into purses? You don't. Guys don't want to be into those things.
Is that your impression of Aaron or just any
woman? No. It's stereotypical woman.
We've both talked with Sabo quite a lot, and I respect his point of view considerably. And like, my girlfriend is appreciative, and I like to bring her along for some of the social aspects at times. But I do mostly agree with him that these are things that, like, it's an escape. It's a separate situation. Like, there could be some crossover. The appreciation is like, she's not telling me, it encourages me to enjoy and to spend money on stupid things. But, you know, it doesn't need to be something we do together all the time.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. It's a separate thing. And it's an opportunity for guy time, right? Going to a Ferrari club thing on Saturday. I'm not inviting my wife. I'm inviting a guy who doesn't get to experience these cars and actually appreciates it. So, yeah, I would just say, don't try too hard. Figure out what she loves, lean into that, support that and appreciate it. And, you know, just hope that she gives the same support and appreciation back for allowing you to do what you love, and then find something that you both love to do together as your thing. But don't try to artificially make car guy stuff a husband and wife stuff. As you get into like the older clubs and you see some of the wives that have come along as like, we've been there the whole time, I'm not going to make a definitive statement on this or get myself in trouble, but there are a lot of people who don't look favorably on that. Like, it doesn't tend to go well because, like, I don't know. I'll just stop there.
No, I think it lines up with the point you've made. You know, if you really truly like doing stuff together, fantastic.
Yeah.
But you don't have to force it.
Yep. Yep.
Celebrity Machines is a proud sponsor of Switchcast, and Celebrity Machines offers more than 250 different screen-accurate license plates as they've appeared in movies and TV shows like Back to the Future, Ghostbusters, The Fast and the Furious, Breaking Bad, and so many more. Celebrity Machines also makes our dealer insert plates as well as our commemorative 2539 plates from the fastest cannonball run ever. Visit CelebrityMachines.com for more info and use promo code SWITCHCAST to save 25.39% at checkout.
What do we have for Shrewd Negotiator, Tyler, before we get to our main topic of the night?
Alrighty, Shrewd Negotiator coming to us once again from Facebook. This is in a San Antonio Craigslist group. So I like this crossover. It's Craigslist on Facebook. Here we go. I need someone to take over my payments on my 2024 Toyota Corolla.
That quickly?
Real fast. I owe $2,100 to save it from being repoed. I'd rather someone take over the payments than have it repossessed.
Wait, so did they not make any payments?
I think that might be what it is.
Sign and drive.
Goodness.
They didn't tell them that sign, drive, and pay is...
We will we'll find out later how many months that is of payments, but I don't want to spoil it for you. Here, they've listed out some steps very kindly for how this transaction will go.
Okay.
You must get in, step one, you must get insurance under your name through Geico, specifically.
What? There's a lot of other insurance companies.
But it's here in the steps, Doug.
Oh.
They say Geico.
Okay.
Number two, you must pay $2,100 and the car is yours.
Is it really yours, though?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Number three, you must have a Texas driver's license and you must try to take over the balance owed of $33,728.25.
Hold on. Before we focus on the number, there's a word there. You must try to take over the payments.
Honestly.
What?
No, I get that much money for a 2024 Toyota Corolla is like, I would have to try to deal with that.
They're missing a step, right? So lease takeover, payment takeover is an actual thing. There's a website called swapalease.com. I assume they're still in existence. I've successfully facilitated a couple lease transfers for customers. They're missing a really big step here, though, which is you must get approved by my current lender to take over the to become the new collateral.
Oh, I'm not seeing that here in their steps they've listed.
No.
Interesting.
This person does not understand how it works. All right, keep going.
You'll find this next part interesting as well. The car is $2,100 to get it off my hands. I am stuck. I don't want to lose the car, but I have to do it the right way. So
right
obviously
way does,
they're doing
does
this.
Not does not include just paying the payments.
Yeah, no. This is the right way.
The other right way.
If you want to purchase the car for the full amount, it is $33,728.25 to pay off. We can get the deal done at the dealership. Thanks. I'm not a dealer. I'm really losing the car. It's under my name with Texas plates.
Yeah, there's no dealership that wants a part of this. But yeah, what was the payment amount again?
I didn't get there, but that is what's next. Payments are $720 a month on a Corolla. What? How?
Tyler.
What?
I have statistics for you.
I don't want them, Doug. I want to live in blissful ignorance that people aren't doing this to themselves.
$720 a month is below average.
How?
The national average new car payment is $735 a month.
Oh, my God. That hurts my brain. That's for average cars. Those are appliances. They're going to be worth 10 grand in 10 years.
5 years, well, maybe.
Yeah.
It's a Tesla.
Gosh. I had like a $670 payment on my first loan for my 911 a few years, and I thought that was like intense. It was a lot of money.
Well, and these are probably 7 or 8 year loans.
Yeah, that was over 3 years. So that was my excuse. I was like, this is a ton of money, but I'll pay it off quickly. My goodness.
Oh, so, okay. So there's a lot to unpack here. Nobody actually needs us to unpack it because you can all see the ridiculousness here. But yeah. So the average MMR, which is a wholesale auction value for a generic 2024 Toyota Corolla with 5,000 miles is around 24 grand. So they are 10,000 upside down.
Good gravy.
The problem is for this person, there's a lot of problems for this person, but one of the problems is if they let it get repoed, the finance company will sue them for the difference. So they owe that no matter what. They're just trying to find a sucker to pay way the flip too much for a 2024 Toyota Corolla.
Goodness.
But like, here's the thing. If somebody gets insurance and then just like tries to take over the payments as they outlined in their incredibly detailed not steps, like the original person is still on the hook for this. So the next guy could just be like, all right, fine, I'll pay you $2,100 to save it from getting repoed and I'll go drive it for 6 months. and the repo company is never going to find it.
Oh, yeah, and they're going to just go after this guy.
And the original person, yeah, they're still on the hook for it.
Oof.
That guy could drive it off a friggin' cliff, and then the original person is on the hook for even more because you get sued for the difference in value between. So if the repo company, you know, the bank repos it, they have their repo fees, whatever they charge. They go sell it at auction. If you owe 34 grand and they sell it for 20, then they're going to sue you for 14 grand. So if you let some other Yahoo take it off your hands for 2,100 bucks and they drive it off a cliff and it's only worth 2 grand, now the original guy is on the hook for 34 minus 2, which I think is 32.
So much discomfort.
I think I'm better at math than this person.
Either way, the math does not look good.
Yet the irony is that they got approved for $720 a month and I can't.
Gosh, that is such a staggering payment. Holy goodness.
Our main topic of the night with 15 minutes left. CDK Global is shut down due to a cyber hack. There's a lot to unpack here. Lots of rumors, conjectures, etc. But here are the numbers. There are 30,000 automotive dealers impacted by this. Now, CDK Global is a DMS. It stands for Dealer Management System, but it is all encompassing. It's not just a lead generation system or advertising site or inventory management. It's everything. It is accounting. It is payroll, inventory management, lead generation, customer management, service side. It is the whole friggin' ball of wax. I borrowed that saying from Hank. Now, a number of people say that CDK had this coming as they are a cheaper slash outdated version compared to other competitors like Reynolds and Reynolds. It also impacted dealers differently depending on their level of dependence on the system as well as their response. So some dealers that I've talked to are essentially just sitting on their hands doing nothing. Their service department is only doing oil changes because that's what they know how to price out. And their sales department is going home at like 2 p.m. Like they're just not writing deals at all. They're doing nothing. Other ones, including a good one that we've done a lot of business with, said that their dealer had a game plan from day one, like 24 hours into this. They had a game plan rocking and rolling. Like, it's difficult, but they had a solution, they had a strategy, and they were ready to go. Now, they did notice that, or they did note that they, I was like, well, how do you know how much money you have? And his answer was, we don't. So these are like multi-dealer chains that don't know how much money is in their accounts or like what their AP, AR is, how much money, like, can we write checks for these cars to buy them? Like, they are really, really struggling. Some of the biggest issues that these dealers have encountered is they don't have an ability to process payroll. So we're coming up on about, I think, 10 days of this shutdown, because once the security breach was realized, CDK shut everything down, which is the right thing to do. But we're coming up on payroll time, and like they can't process payroll. So all of their employees are going, how are we going to get paid? They don't know how much money they have. They have to essentially add inventory manually to different listing sites, except cars.com, which somehow they use, you know, they're an advertising site, one of the biggest. They use CDK. So like our inventory on cars.com is a week outdated. They have to write finance contracts manually. They have to write service ROs manually. So I was thinking like they should hire all the Hanks, all the retired boomers. They should like bring them back in for a reunion tour. Like, this is no big deal. This is easy. What are you young bucks doing?
It's called a piece of paper.
Yeah. I can estimate that. Just look at it.
Do you know how to balance a checkbook?
Yeah, right? You ever heard of a general ledger? Within a few days of this happening, the Federal Reserve was also hacked, and apparently 33 terabytes worth of data is being held for ransom.
This is alleged. I don't think there's any proof yet.
Correct. The company that hacked the Federal Reserve has been raided by the feds before, and they have been accused or whatever of doing two different false claims of we have all this data, but they actually didn't. But they also have done some pretty good hacks in the past. There's a lot of speculation around the ransom amount for CDK, with the most reliable rumors we've heard being around the $50 million mark. But we've also heard $10 million and $2 billion. So, you know, but according to an internal email from CDK Global today, they have been restored and are anticipating being online within a matter of days, not weeks. So they're working towards getting everything back.
Yeah, I've heard by July-ish should
be. Of what year?
This year, I think, is the target, but you know, we'll see if they come back online.
So Tyler, I'm here for the snark. I just sell cars, but Tyler has a real job, and he is a software engineer or something like that. So Tyler has some like expert insight into this. So Tyler, what do you know about cybersecurity and what went on here?
So that we have, and I'll preface this and I'll probably say it a few more times. I don't know specifics. I've never used the CDK platform. I know, you know, it's apparently very outdated. There's a lot of pieces, parts to it. You know, none of what I'm saying is going to be like attacking CDK because I don't actually know what any of it's like. But what I can tell you is that most likely a system that handles literally everything has been in development for a long time. And if it's cheap, they probably don't have the money to pay to rewrite key components of the system. So there's a lot of stuff that's probably running very out of date software libraries or packages or components that have vulnerabilities that can be very easily exploited if the people know what they're doing.
Okay.
So this is a ransomware attack where essentially these folks from this group got access to their network, to their systems.
Is it China?
It was from Eastern Europe, allegedly. Is where these folks are from. So not
it's all
quite.
The trucking companies.
They're trying to get to the source.
They ran out of money to fix their trucks.
So they have gained access and essentially most likely encrypted key files and systems so that they can't be used. And they hold the key to decrypt it. And that's where they like pay us, you know, $80 million, sure. $100 million to get access.
So but even if they decrypt it, like they still have to solve this for the future, right? Because there is a weakness in.
There have been instances of people of massive companies paying the ransom and getting hacked shortly after because the vulnerability is still there. So I'm not jealous of anybody that works for CDK right now because they've got to be on fire. I am interested if they'll tell us how this happened. There's many ways that somebody could gain access. Could be a phishing attack in an email asking for a username or password, you know, in an official looking form. They're getting very good.
Car salesmen are real smart.
Well, I've almost been fooled. I've seen some stuff and I'm like, this looks sketchy, but like it's getting good. So you got to be real careful when you get emails with PDFs or invoices or asking for information that says log into your Microsoft account.
I did get an email from a foreign account the other day, foreign name, with proof of payment as the headline, which seemed incredibly suspicious, but it was actually a customer attaching a PDF of the wire transfer they sent to us.
So it's you just got to be skeptical. You need to be constantly skeptical at a healthy level of all of this stuff.
Check the URLs. Like,
yes.
I've clicked on links before, right? I'm like, okay, well, let's see where this goes. But then I look at the actual URL up in the URL bar, and I'm like, nope.
Don't.
Nice try.
Yeah, if you don't know that, hover over all your links all the time, just in case. So it could have been something like that. They could have gotten a password from somewhere that was just reused. The amount of companies that have the same password for a bunch of admin accounts with like privileged access to everything.
So this has nothing to do with exotic car hacks. This isn't the same kind of hack we're talking about.
Different hack. Different hack.
Okay. All right.
These guys could buy a lot of exotic cars if they get this ransom payment, but
which they probably will.
But my take on a lot of this is that we over the last 20 years, we have seen a movement towards systems that do everything. One-stop shop. Pay us this money, you get it all. And I think we might be going away from that because there's a lot of, it is a single point of failure that is taking thousands of businesses down. And if you pay one company for your bookkeeping and then another for some inventory management and another site to handle financing and stuff like that, you know, you can maybe work with companies that are very focused on providing excellence in one area. And if they go down, it doesn't take your whole business down.
Right.
That's just my opinion. You know, I don't run any of this stuff, but.
You know, it's interesting, actually, to this effect, I should have saved the email, but we did get a threatening email the other day regarding, you know, somebody that was going to hack our site. But I knew it was a joke because they were talking about how terrible and out of date and janky our website was. And I was like, oh, this email must be 6 months old because we just had our website redone. So I sent it to Ethan. I'm like, check out this joke. But they essentially were like, you know, we're going to take down your site because it's such a joke. And, you know, they wanted to like redesign it. I think they were threatening us or blackmailing us to get the job to redesign it.
Yeah.
And I was like, we literally just launched an amazing new website. Like 6 months ago, I might have been like, oh, shoot, I gotta pay these guys. But I'm like, no, this is, we have a great website. And I think they even spelled our domain name wrong in the email. So I didn't take them too seriously. But.
Hey, it's an approach to getting clients, I guess.
Yeah,
that's bold.
Ethan, you should try that.
Or I'll hack you. Yeah, it's good. Good work.
Here's the great irony, though, right? It's the amazing irony. If you're done.
No. Yeah, I think it's interesting. I hope that all of this, as these big hacks continue to happen, people will start taking this stuff a lot more seriously. You have to learn how, just like you have to learn to be safe. If you're in a public place, you know, things to watch out for, things to be concerned about, you have to do that online as well.
Yeah.
Don't reuse passwords. Don't click on unfamiliar links. Stranger danger. You know, you just, because stuff like this is extremely disruptive. Yeah, don't do that, Doug. Do we need to get you a manager?
Am I supposed to have 120 different passwords?
Yeah, and you have a program that manages it for you. And then you have a password for that program. You just got to hope that company doesn't get hacked.
Get that password. Yeah, then you're screwed. So, okay. Here's the delicious irony. Delicious irony.
That must have been some really tasty irony. Joked on it a little bit.
Some days I wish we weren't live. CDK Global has a marketing post out there with the caption, quote, 84% of customers won't come back if their data has been compromised. And their graphic has the tagline, quote, you're compliant, but are you safe? And so this is a digital poster for a post FTC compliance webinar, which FTC, this is pretty big news in the automotive industry. FTC has been working on new rules for the automotive and specifically the auto loan industry over the past year or so. So they've recently changed and updated. So everybody's trying to like learn their compliance, right? So of course, FTC has this this webinar coming out entitled "You're Compliant, But Are You Safe?" And it is scheduled for July 11th, and it is hosted by Mark Dante, the National Cybersecurity SME for CDK Global.
I don't think he'll have a job here very soon.
I thought this was like a joke when I first saw the screenshot, and I went on LinkedIn and found Mark Dante, and like his profile picture was this graphic for the cybersecurity seminar.
They should, they got a lot of other stuff going on, but they should get that pulled. I do also find it amusing. So Chase Ambrose in a YouTube chat, second comment of the evening, all the way back when we started, finally watching one of these live for the first time because the CDK hack affected our dealership. We are still able to sell, but it's all on paper and it sucks.
Oh, man. So Chase started in the car business like 3 weeks ago. So he's getting thrown to the wolves.
Good luck.
Oh, man. Sorry, Chase. Good luck. Good luck. Scaminator, before we run out of time.
Real quick, before we do that, Shannon K, a longtime listener of the live show with their 10th super chat.
Yeehaw.
YouTube is telling me this. Really enjoy the show. I am weird. So whatever we end up doing, they will watch. Thank you very much for the entertainment.
Thank you, Shannon.
I think we need to get out of here, Doug. We're both screwing up. Yikes.
How much did you pregame?
None.
Oh gosh. Maybe I have neurological issues. Just can't string my words together. Okay. Scaminator.
Yes. And the Scaminator today, let me get to it. So this one also from Facebook, this is for a, 2024 Volkswagen Bugatti Chiron Supersport.
I think you pronounce it wrong based on how it's spelled.
Bugatti.
Yeah.
Bugatti. So the description, Bugatti Chiron, bring a trailer. Don't question too much.
Bring a trailer. That's the,
I think you need to bring a trailer.
That's the imperative. Yeah. Okay.
Don't question too much. No title. 500 deposit needed. Oh, there's no unit there, so I don't know if it's 500 deposits that are needed. It's an expensive car, probably, or if it's $500. They put their Cash App in here, though. it was listed for $95,000. But hold on, Doug. But before you have many thoughts. That's a lot of money, especially for a lot of people in this economy. They have discounted it to $25,000. Should we go get a trailer? It's in San Jose, California. Let's go.
I mean, there's not much to question.
Yeah, don't question too much, Doug.
I can I have the VIN?
Too many questions. Don't ask.
Wait, no, there's no title. So.
Yeah, who knows?
Oh, gosh.
It does say that this listing is getting a lot of activity, so we got to move fast.
I think that goes without saying. A $25,000 Bugatti Chiron with no title. Bring a trailer. Don't question too much. Do not come during daylight hours.
Yeah. The photos are at night, like very bad, like lens flare from rain or something. Yeah. Yeah. This is, I'm not sure I'd go there.
Come alone.
Yes. Bring your 500 deposits.
Yikes. I think they are just scamming people for deposit money.
Honestly, yeah, that's probably it.
That's probably it. It's the good scammers would list a $1.5 million Bugatti Chiron for like $1.2 million and then take $5,000 deposits via wire transfer. The bad scammers post a grainy photo of a Bugatti Chiron
with a Cash App
for $25,000 and be like $500 Cash App. I wonder if it's the same guy who's trying to pay off his 2024 Toyota Corolla to save it from getting repoed. he's just gotten real inventive. Oh man. We're just going to leave that one there.
Boy, that sure is something.
Okay, it is time for the props and flops.
Ooh, here we go. I'll just take it away. Props and flops brought to you by...
We're just going
to
rename it props and flops. Plops and props. It is time for the plops and props.
The plops and props are brought to you by Switch Cars. Switch Cars is the enthusiast dealership where we buy, sell, consign, service, and store only cars that we like ourselves. Check out our handpicked inventory at switchcars.com. And our pick of the week from Switch Cars inventory this week is what?
1988 Porsche 911 in granite green over gray green.
Oh,
there's a lot of gray going on.
There's so many things I like in that.
I know. Gray and green inside and outside. 70,000 miles. And it's, of course, the G50 transmission, which is excellent and fantastic and far better than the 915. So everybody says. Very well maintained, $25,000+ spent in the last 3 years, making sure it was all up to date on maintenance, including a new clutch. And we are asking a hefty $108,000 for it. But if you mention discount code SwitchCast, you'll get it for $107,000.
Nice.
Trades welcome. Financing available.
Do you have your Cash App for $500 deposits?
Yes. Nice. Well, actually, I don't have I don't know how to use Cash App, but we take Venmo for deposits. Yes. And we'll ship it using a reputable shipper as well.
Yeah.
Not a broker. Although, on that note, I have dogged brokers for years and years and years. There have been a few brokers that claim to be better than the rest, different than the rest, because so many of you have asked, like, okay, fine, how do I get my car shipped without it being a nightmare? And that's a very valid question. We've identified the problem, not the solution. Is a really good broker the solution? Not really, but it's maybe an okay interim if one of those actually exists. A few of them have reached out to us, and we're trying to vet them, and maybe we'll have an endorsed transport broker for next season for all of you people trying to ship your cars without the headache. Maybe. We'll see if any of them actually are better than the rest or if they're just making claims like everybody else. And if you think you're that transport broker, then by all means, reach out to me. But I might charge like an application fee to try to go through and vet all these people because it's a lot of work. So anyway, what is our flop of the week, Tyler?
So our flop of the week from abcnews.com, Ford recalls over 550,000 pickup trucks because transmissions can suddenly downshift to first gear.
Oh, that's a good recall.
I get those off the road now. Yesterday.
There's a lot of recalls every week, and everybody's like, oh, man, Toyota sucks. 500,000 recalls, 2 million recalls. Tesla sucks. All these recalls. But they're usually kind of dumb stuff. But downshifting into first?
Yes. And this is no matter how fast the trucks are going. So this covers some F-150s from the 2014 model year. So if you are driving one of those, please check to see if you are a part of this recall and go get it done post haste. The problem is caused by a lost signal between a transmission speed sensor and the powertrain control computer. Mm. It could also be corrosion and problems with connector pins.
Yikes. That's electronics for you.
This just dies.
I was riding in a Chevy with a friend of mine one time on the highway, and the transmission pins had worn out so well that he like brushed the column shift gear thing. We're going 70 miles an hour on the highway, 60, the speed limit is 60. We were going 60 and it shifted into reverse and just like locked up, and we went into a spin just out of the blue. So I could imagine how bad/terrifying this could be when
so
the car
scary.
Just shifts into first randomly.
The Ford statement does say that before the truck's downshift, drivers could, I didn't think this said could, that's a strange word to use, see a malfunction light indicator on the dashboard. In some cases, signals can be restored while the trucks are moving and they can be driven normally. In other cases, drivers may need to stop and restart the engine to get the transmission to work properly. Why is all this necessary?
I know people whose engines have blown up because they didn't see warning lights. Long before their engines would have blown up. How long do they have to notice this light before it shifts into first?
And also, could that means there's instances where it didn't light up and it just yoinked itself into first?
No, I think they have a realistic view on people's general inattention and lack of they'll see a light and go, "What's that?" It's the genie light.
I also got to think, too, like, I don't know how all of this is very complicated. I don't work in car, automotive, programming, componentry, all that business. Why is the option when things go weird to just slam it into first? What if we notice a signal loss or something else, why isn't the programming to, like, put the car into manual mode and tell the driver, and then they can do whatever, so it doesn't just do
or
something
neutral,
dangerous?
Or limp mode or like, something like that.
I'm in limp mode, I'm in neutral, or, you know, please coast to it. Like, I don't know, something that isn't immediate first. Like, nobody thought, now you don't think this is going to happen, but
yeah, prop of the week, Volkswagen is shifting billions of dollars from EV development into internal combustion engine development. About a third of their EV budget, as reported by, I believe, thedrive.com, which is a whopping $64 billion, is moving from EVs into internal combustion engines. And this is coming from the same company whose CEO a year ago had basically said that they were seeing the end of internal combustion engines, that they were fully into EVs. So they have backtracked along with a number of other companies. On the flip side, though, they have committed $5 billion. This is pretty much breaking news. I think it was today or yesterday. They've committed $5 billion to Rivian, who's one of the, I guess, forerunners of the EV world. They still haven't made a profit yet. They're losing money, but Volkswagen is kind of their their golden parachute here, and their Rivian share price jumped significantly after the announcement of this news, in contrast to, of course, Fisker, who's going bankrupt and I think really was hoping for some kind of a bailout like this. But Rivian actually shows some more promise than other EV models. People actually love their products. People I talk to who own Rivians like them. Their products are actually being produced and delivered. That seems like a big step for some of some EV companies. That's unobtainable. They're on the road. They actually work. So, yeah, it seems like Rivian is putting out a good product, and Volkswagen has identified that. And in Volkswagen's quest to be more EV focused, they're relying on Rivian somewhat and investing in their development. So that's kind of cool to see. Honestly, I know we've disparaged a lot of EVs on here. It's not because we don't like electric motors. They're actually really, really great. They're efficient. They're reliable. They have a lot of torque. What we don't like is the agenda behind them. So when a private company invests their own money into another private company that seems to be doing things well, other than turning a profit, we like that. We like to see that. So I'm interested to see where some of these companies go. So there we go. Yeah, that's it. This is our final live episode in this format for a while. Thank you all for joining us. We'll do a brief tip talk after we close out the regular segment of the show here for you audio listeners. Thank you to my co-host, Tyler Sanders, to our sponsors, Boxcast, Nuts for Sticks, Switch Cars, Celebrity Machines, Parallel Printworks, and Stephen Holm Woodworking. Thank you very much to our producer, Ethan Huffnagel. Our bumper music is provided by Emily and Ivory. You can stream their full album on Spotify or SoundCloud. This episode will be available next Monday in audio format wherever you listen to podcasts. If you'd like to inquire about next season's sponsorship, ask us a question, or just catch up on old episodes, for all things Switchcast, go to switchcast.live. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next Wednesday at 8 p.m. as we look forward to edifying, educating, and entertaining you on the drive of your life.